Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today. As always, we begin with gratitude. Thank you to our generous sponsors for the Parsha series for the year, Becky and Avi Katz and family, in memory of David Grossman, Becky's father, Le'iloi Nisrimas, David Ben Menachem Manish. This morning's shiur is also sponsored by Deborah and Daniel Scheinbein in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Deborah's father, Aryeh Leib Ben Salom Ben Shalom. Bobayom, it's Neshama Shirav and Aliyah, thank you so much. And by the Schreier family, the Lidl Neshma's Dov Ber Ben Aaron Halevi, Bernard Sullivan, his Yerzeit is coming Shabbos, 28th of Teves, and Refuah Shlema of David Ber Ben Edel, Dov Ber Ben Edel, who should have a complete Refuah Shlema. Thank you so much to all those who have sponsored. Boker Tov, good morning to you, in person and live, great to see you and be together, and virtually, online, live or later, great to be with you. We are reading Parshas Bo. This Shabbos, we have the privilege of learning Parshas Bo, page 340 in the Art Scroll, Stone Chumash. And to continue the story of the plagues, the story of the Makos. Paro remains obstinate and stubborn. Paro continues to refuse to let Moshe's people, Hashem's people, go. The plagues continue to be visited upon him. And as I said, I think last week, no matter how many times you've read the story, and we know the way it ends, there are so many things to discover, so many curious ways that the psukim are worded, so much to learn and so much to glean. So we'll begin with a familiar teaching, and that is the opening words of the parasha. We've shared this before, but it bears repeating. Vayomer Hashem Moshe bo el paro, ki ani echparati esli bo veslei bavadav laman shisi asosai lebikir bo. Hashem says to Moshe, nu, come, bo el paro, let's go. We're going to paro. Why are we going? Ki ani echparati esli bo veslei bavadav. I've hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, so that I could put these signs of mine in their midst. Here in this opening pasuk, Hashem divulges to us exactly why he orchestrates events the way he does. Because there is this overarching question, why the pomp and circumstance? Is Hashem trying to impress? And the answer is yes. He's not trying to impress for his own ego. He's trying to impress upon us his presence, his existence, for generations to come, for us to turn back and say that he did those events then, so we would know then and forever that he didn't create a world then move on, he didn't leave it behind, he didn't become distracted or turn his attention to other things. He remains intimately involved in our lives. So he specifically violated his rules to reveal himself then in the way he did, so that we would continue to draw upon it until today, which we do. Every Shabbos, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Every day we read Shema, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Any day that we live and we wonder, why? Why am I going through what I'm going through? Is it all random? Is it all chance? Is it all happenstance? Where is God? We'd read the Parsha, and we'd say Shema, and we'd kiss our tzitzis, and we make Kiddush on Shabbos, and we remember that just like he was involved then, he's involved now. That he didn't move on. He didn't leave us behind. He's not a creator who created and then turns his attention to the next project. He continues to be acutely aware of and invested in every aspect of our lives. And that's why he did it. He doesn't want to. He's a kel mistater. God prefers to be hidden. He prefers to be in the background. He prefers and wishes he were not in the limelight. He'd rather blend in. He'd rather do his thing. He'd rather we have to search to discover him. Whenever he reveals himself, it's going against his inclination. It's going against what he prefers to do. So why did he do it? In the greatest and most public way ever, unprecedented and unparalleled, he tells us the very reason. L'man shisi ososai eila bikir bo. So that he could put these signs in their midst, in our midst. It was a curriculum for the Egyptians and for us. But the curious word in this opening pasuk is the word bo. God turns to Moshe and he says, bo al paro, nu, let's go, let's head out. My father-in-law likes to say, gegangen, nu, Moshe, let's go. We got places to be, things to do, let's go. What should the word be? Not bo, but lech. I've got an assignment, I've got a mission. Nu, I'm staying here, you go. You're late, get going. You got something to do. So Rav Soloveitchik and the beautiful OU Rabbi Soloveitchik Chumash writes the following. When Hashem chooses Moshe, he was very reluctant to accept the mission. He argued with Hashem, according to our tradition, the Medrash Shmos Rabbah, for 7 full days. He considered himself unqualified to be the leader of the people and to confront Paro. Too modest, too humble. Who am I that I should go to Paro? Who am I to be worthy of being the Redeemer? Hashem answered him, I will be with you. Go, because I will be with you. That's the answer. Hashem promised Moshe would never desert him. He would participate in the implementation of the mission. Together they would enter Paro's chambers. Therefore, when Hashem instructed Moshe to appear before Paro, he used the imperative of bo instead of lech. When Moshe addresses Paro, God will be present. When he raises the staff, Hashem will be with him. Bo, in effect, Rabbi Soloveitchik encourages us to reread the opening pasuk. It's not bo el Paro, that's not the name of the parsha. Bo imadi el Paro. Hashem is saying, come with me. Come with me. And Rabbi Soloveitchik now, in a classic brisker fashion, says there's a halachic principle involved here. The halacha knows of two kinds of shlichus, two types of power of attorney, two types of acting by proxy. One type of shlichus is a purely formal, juristic assignment given to a person. The other is personalistic and experiential. Rabbi Soloveitchik, by the way, didn't learn English till he was an adult and came to America. Just in case you want to feel bad about yourself today. The former is a practical institution designed simply to perform legal transactions by proxy. Quite often, one cannot attend to business personally. The halacha provides the opportunity to act through a proxy, to ask someone to finalize or sanction certain obligations, certain deeds or agreements. This type of acting through proxy is always associated with the absence of the real owner. So Avram sends Eliezer, go betroth a wife for Yitzchak. You can send someone to do a business deal. We can send someone as a shliach to give a get. There's a notion, there is an institution of shlichus, of agency, of proxy, of power of attorney. The whole reason I make you my proxy is because I don't want to go to the HOA meeting and vote. It's the whole reason I sign a proxy, which we should do responsibly and know what we're signing and understand its consequences, not just because someone knocked on our door and said, close your eyes and sign here. But the whole reason we sign is because I don't want to go. So when you sign a proxy, power of attorney, it is in lieu, in your stead. Second kind of shlichus is personalistic. It's a relationship between two people who are united by a bond of friendship. Two people committed to the same destiny. Two people sharing in each other's travails and joys. Two people working for the same cause and confiding in each other. Two people living in an open, frank existence. These two people achieve a common identity from the viewpoint of halacha. Each of them may act in certain areas on behalf of the other, even though the latter is right there and is capable of performing the same deed on their own. Essentially, the shlichus is a merge of identity. One acts on behalf of the other in the other person's presence. The shlichus entrusted to a prophet belongs to the second category. Man unites with Hashem, cleaves to Hashem, loves Hashem with great passion. He feels the hot breath of eternity upon his cold face. He feels the Almighty. He experiences the great sweetness and exalted engendered by the touch of infinity. That is what Hashem is saying. Bo el Paro. It is not the formal shlichus wherein I absent myself and you do what I've told you to do. It is the personalistic shlichus, where there is a union between me and you. My thoughts will become your thoughts. My speech will break through you. Therefore, Moshe, you are qualified because I am qualified and I will be right beside you. Bo imadi el Paro. I will walk with you. I will be there when you enter the palace. I will not leave you on your own. You are the shliach tzibor. I am the tzibor. I am united with you. We'll walk together arm in arm, so to speak. Man can come close to the Almighty, that he and the Almighty are united, one voice, one feeling, one experience, finitude somehow embraced by infinity, and yet not disappearing. Beautifully written, almost poetically written by Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I share that with you because it's a theme I've been coming back to a lot lately. It's a theme I'm thinking about a lot lately, is this notion of the bow, not lech, that when we stand up and we show leadership, when we feel we're here on a mission, when we're trying to make a difference, there's risk involved. And there's exposure involved and vulnerability involved. And it's easier. It's easier not to lead a mission-driven life. It's easier to not to try to bring change or create redemption or repair a world. It's easier to stay in the background. It's easier to be indifferent. It's easier to take a pass. But a person has to remember that Hashem doesn't say, Lech, go and good luck to you. He says, Bo, come, come with me. I'll be by your side, advocating and lobbying that person or standing up for that reason. I'll be by your side defending the vulnerable and the people who need to be defended and speaking the truth. I'll be by your side. So this is a theme, Shmos Va'ira Bo. I gave almost two drushes in a row the last 2 weeks. Either no one noticed or you were all too kind to say anything. But the theme of Shlichus that Hashem is saying to us, you've got a job, you've got a mission. Don't wake up and think it's what I can take, it's what I can give. Why are we here? What difference we're meant to make? And it doesn't matter if you're in the prime of your career, or even arguably more when you are retired and have more free time and flexibility and margin and space to think, what's my legacy and what am I doing with the remainder of my years and what difference do I want to make within my family, within my personal avoda, as an example to others, and within the community at large. And whenever we hesitate or pause, whenever we're afraid or anxious, whenever we feel we've placed a target on our back, we should remember it's Bo Imadi El Paro. Hashem is not just sending us out, abandoning us, good luck, go on your own. It's come together, together as one. That's Rabbi Soloveitchik. I want to take you now to the Kotzk. We've been learning Emes Ve'emuna, a new collection of Kotzker Torah. Bo El Paro, Ksiv Bo, V'lama Lo Ksiv Lech. Everybody asks the same question. I'm sorry to say, you didn't discover this one today. Everybody asks, why is it Bo? It should be Lech. But the Kotzker gives a different answer. Kevin She'etzla Kodesh Baruch Hu Lo Shayach Lech. Ki malei chol ha'aretz kvodo. Lech means I'm staying here, and zaygizant, go. You will now be without me. I will remain here, and you will go and be there. But Kadosh Baruch Hu, with the Ribono Shel Olam, with the Almighty, he's malei chol ha'aretz kvodo. He's everywhere. There is no go where you've left him behind. Wherever you go, he will be there. Wherever you go, he will be there by your side. Now, it happens to be that in the footnote, the Beis Yisrael, Gereb and others say, there's several times in the Torah where Hashem says, Lech. So what happened to Melech Ol Haaretz Kvodo? What happened to Melech Ol Haaretz Kvodo? Makas Dam is one example. He's going to the Yor. No, Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's where Paro relieved himself. He didn't want to be there. All kinds of Teirutzim. But then he says, there's more places than just that. So why specifically here? Kosha halo kama pa mekosav Lech? Hakavana b'divrei Rebbe Mekotz ki daika po shem yizborach hayetzorach lomar bo ki lemoshe Rabbeinu haya pachad aleches lebeiso shel paro lekach amar shem yizborach bo ani imcha lo tifached. You're going to the palace, you're going into the right into the heart, you're going right into the place of power. You could hesitate, you could be concerned or cautious. Specifically here Hashem says Meloch ol ha'aretz kvodo, don't worry, I'm in the halls of Congress and the Oval Office. I'm in the voting booth. I'm in the boardroom. I'm in the courtroom. I'm in the operating room. There's nowhere you can go that I'm not there. So wherever you go to fulfill whatever mission you have, do it with a sense of bo, not lech. Not I'm sending you out and now good luck on your own. Hope the operation goes well. Hope the closing arguments go well. Hope the business deal goes well. Hope the lobbying meeting goes well. It's not good luck, you go, I'll be here. But rather, bo. Wherever you go, I will be, because Meloch Ol Haaretz Kvodo, a beautiful, beautiful Kotzker Torah. Okay, moving right along to the next pasuk. Lamata saper ba'oznei v'encha ben'encha yisasher elata b'mitzrayim, ve'es oso osaya shesamti bom, v'idatam ki ani Hashem. So why am I doing all of this pomp and circumstance? Why am I suspending and reversing my normal rule of not revealing myself so explicitly to the world? Because I want the world to see my signs and symbols. I want you to forever look back and remember, even hundreds of years or millennia later, that I remain intimately involved in every one of your lives. And I want you to tell, Laman Tisaper, I want you to tell, Ba'aznei Bincha, in the ears of your children and of your grandchildren, Esa Sher Hisalalti B'Mitzrayim, I want you to tell them the story of when I made a mockery, when I made a joke out of Egypt, and the signs, the symbols, the plagues that I did there, vidatem, then they will know ki ani Hashem. Okay, there's a lot to unpack here on this pasuk. We could spend the next week on the pasuk. We won't. We could, but we won't. We won't. Laman tesaper ba'oznei bincha. So why does it say ba'oznei bincha? Let's start with that. What could the pasuk have said? Laman tesaper lebincha. Lebincha. Let's say one of my children, I say, Yocheved, go tell in the ear of one of my children. Go scream in their ear. I said, go tell them. So why here is it, letaper be'oznei bincha? Go tell them in their ear. So the Ponovitcher Rav, Rav Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, said the following. He said, bezmanam regilim, dai omnam lesaper lebonam, kedaber isharei eyu. Omnam kasher yeshnam rashim chazakim, yesh lazmiya ela ozen pnima. There are two types of conversations that we have. We have casual conversations. We have conversations where, did you hear what happened today? Let me tell you what I had for lunch. Let me tell you, you'll never believe who I ran into in the parasha shir. okay, it's important to be good listeners and to validate, make the other person feel heard. But on the other hand, it's okay to remain a superficial type of hearing. It's casual conversation. And then there are important things. Really deep, really powerful, really, really important things where you want to capture a person's attention. Where you say, listen up, listen carefully. Stop doing what you're doing. Put your phone away. Pay attention. We have all kinds of language we'll use to alert someone or get their attention. So say, this is really important. I want to make sure that you get this. I want to make sure that you hear this. So Davka Mitzrayim, Yeshna Rashko, Gadol Shekoch Vatzim Yadi, Hepech Emuna, Sham Magisha Torah Lamante Saper Ba'oznei Bincha, Saper Sadvarim El Toch Oznav. Says the Panovich Rav, specifically here and now, Mitzrayim is a culture which promotes the sense of arrogance and independence and ego. I'm responsible. I did. All about me. So here, right now, press pause. Tell your children, time out. Come here. Gather around. Do you see what just happened? Do you understand what's going on in the world? Has this penetrated your eardrum and your heart and your soul and your head? Saper sadvarim tochaznav. All over and all around us is a superficial listening. We have to know, we have to let our children know when it's critically important for them to be active listeners. Listen actively, listen carefully, shut off all the output and only turn on the input and absorb what you're seeing and what you're hearing. You can't do that all the time, you can't do it too often. A person can't live at that level of listening. But there are critical times, critical junctures, critical experiences where we say, put that down. Simchas, there are moments of incredible, unbridled joy. And if you look, you're watching the event through the screens of all the people in front of you. There are moments of a vacation. There are moments of a natural wonder where everyone's struggling, the filter and the angle and the selfie and the... Put it down. Experience it. Be present. Let it transform you. Imbibe and absorb it. That joyful moment or that natural event or that scene or that whatever it is. But be'oznei bincha, l'man tesaper. This is a message, a critical message to parents that l'man tesaper, it's talking here towards, and I don't only mean biological parents, there are those longing still to have children, we bless you should have children, but I mean to the generation responsible of transmitting to the next generation. That we can't get absorbed ourselves into the culture of just superficial relationship, that you're always preoccupied and distracted and only half listening to the other. But there are precious moments, precious experiences, and precious messages that stop and daber ba'oznei bincha. Make it clear that I'm talking not just casually right now, but this is really important to hear. This is really important to hear. Now the next question is, the next question is, why does the pasuk end? V'yedatem ki ani Hashem. How'd the pasuk begin? L'man tesaper ba'oznei bincha. Nu, call your children and your grandchildren around and tell them directly in their ear everything I did in Egypt, the joke I made of Egypt. Why? V'yedatem ki ani Hashem. And they will know that I am Hashem. It should have said, v'yed'u. V'yedatem means, and you, meaning your children and you, will all know that I'm God. But you already know that I'm God. That's why you are communicating and transmitting it to your children and grandchildren. Should have said, call your kids around, have a Seder table, tell them the story, and then they'll know. Then they'll know. Last week we spoke about Rashi, El Ha'avos. Know where you come from. Know there's an Avraham and Yaakov inside you. Don't ever say, I don't have a background. Because if you know where you come from, you know where you're going. If you know where you come from, you know the strength, the potential, the capacity you have inside you. And I mentioned that I believe we should all know our story. It's a responsibility to tell that story of person should know their grandparents, their great-grandparents, where they came from, what they endured, their resiliency, how they got here. We should know it. We should know it. History is important. We should know it because it's our story. It's our story. Rabbi Sachs, Zichron Levracha, in his Haggadah, talks about the difference between history and memory. History begins with his. It's his story. You learn history about somebody else. You open a history book and it's his story. Memory begins with me. Memory is an active memory that I continue to carry. It's I live. When we give the story of Pesach Mitzrayim, when we tell our children what parents and grandparents endured in the Holocaust, or when they came over to this country, or how they had to sacrifice in order to rebuild Torah, we're not just sharing a piece of history. We are not a people of history. We're a people of memory. A people of memory. So I know the story. It's a memory that I'm transmitting and sharing. So it should say V'yedu, and then they will know. And now they can tell their children. Why does it say V'datem? Listen to this insight of Rav Yechezkel Abramsky. See what I did there? Ba'aznei, I just told you, listen. Listen. So, practicing what we preach. Rav Yechezkel Abramsky, the Chazon Yechezkel, says V'datem. He has a tremendous insight into emunah. Yesh lahari l'chora hitzarech lomar V'yedu ki ani Hashem. Shebincha ben bincha yedu. Lama kasuv V'datem. Why does it say, you'll all know that I'm God. You already know. That's why you're teaching the children and grandchildren. It should say V'yedu. Says the Chazon Yechezkel, Bizchus sheisapru yashrishim Moshe v'Aaron atzma v'sa'amuna yoser. Gam hibru lachem keshemesh b'tzaharayim. Says, you know, when you tell the story of Hashem's role in your life, you could be telling that story for the thousandth time. The thousandth time. And many of us do tell the same stories for the thousandth time. How do you know? Because if you watch our spouse, their lips are moving as we tell the story. They know exactly where we're going next. They know exactly where. My son-in-law, one of my amazing sons-in-law, the other day, texted me live while I was behind the bima and something came up and someone said something and triggered me to tell a story. And before I said the story, he said, you're about to tell the story. He's married for a year and a half. He already knows my stories. It's Nebuch. I need new stories. Already that predictable. So you might have told the story 1,000 times already, but when you tell it 1,001st, your emunah becomes even stronger. In other words, why do we tell the story? One might have thought you're telling it for the listener, for the recipient, for the one who hears the story. But we're telling it for ourselves. We're telling it because our emunah grows the more we talk about Hashem. The more we tell the story of His role in our life. The more we have the Hashkacha Pratis, WhatsApp group of our family. The more we point and identify, this is where He was in my life today and every day. And the more we repeat and the more we tell, the more we believe, the more we live, the more alive that we are. And this is what the Rambam, the end of Parshas Va'era, So the osos and the mofsim, these incredible wonders, are so that we can tell a story over and over and over again. Ha'amantam kiadaber. We say in Halal, we said yesterday. Ha'amantam kiadaber. Dabar melech tehillim Halal, ha'amantam kiadaber. So Chassidish Sfarim say, Hemantem ki adaber. You know when you have emunah? When you talk about emunah. When you tell stories about emunah. When you describe Hashem's role in your life. When you stop and you say, did you see Him in that sunset? In that sunrise? Did you see what just happened? We've been circling the parking lot and a spot opened punkt in front of the restaurant. In front of the doctor's office. Thank you, Hashem. Hemantem ki adaber. The more we talk about Hashem, there are more emunah we have, and therefore the result of Laman Tisaper Ba'aznei Bincha is not V'yedu, they'll know. It's V'datem. When you create an environment, a conversation around Hashem, all of you are lifted as a result. All of you will see Hashem more as a result. Now, we're still in the same pasuk. Laman Tisaper Ba'aznei Bincha. What are you supposed to whisper, and what are you supposed to tell your children? Eis asher hisalalti b'mitzrayim. Hisalalti b'mitzrayim. You can almost see Hashem smirk in this pasuk. What does the word hisalalti mean? Tzachti kamok hisalalti bi. Kasher hisalal bahem. What does it mean, hisalalti? I made a mockery. I made them a joke. Rashi, I made them a joke. I made a mockery. I'm laughing at them. We're laughing at them. They became the laughing stock. That's alalti. Others say, b'nebachya. And the Rashbam said the word alalti comes from alal, which means ilah, He's the first cause. I use them to demonstrate that I am the source of all power. But go to Rashi's understanding. And within Rashi's understanding, so I made a mockery. What's going on? Kodesh Baruch Hu could have taken us out with the blink of an eye. Kodesh Baruch Hu could take us out with no fanfare, with no attention. Well, he's making a mockery. L'maro zos nasa kol ha-mahalich shemosh v'arabam b'shem Hashem u'mevakshem me'paro. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have just blinked his eye. It could have been a massive earthquake. The Jews could have run for their lives, been liberated, attained freedom. Instead, Rav Dan Segal says, the Mashkiach, why did Hashem structure it that the whole leaving of Egypt took place in this facade, in this joke that Moshe and Aaron would go to Paro and ask for permission? Who did they have behind them? The infinite, omnipotent, omniscient being, source, ruler, controller of the universe, who if he wanted to, without anyone's permission, certainly could have liberated the Jewish people. So why are you going through this whole... what's the word I'm looking for? It's not just a rigmarole, it's an illusion. You're living through this whole illusion. You're going through this whole... charade. Thank you. Who said that? That was a chesed. Thank you for that chesed. There's nothing worse. There are worse things. But it's miserable getting stuck looking for that word. So charade. That was a chesed. Shkoyach. So why go through the charade? Hi, Paro, we're here. Hashem sent us. By the way, He controls the universe, not you. And we all know you go to the bathroom at the Nile. Right? So, but can we have permission to take the people out? What's with the charade? What's with the joke? So he says, Rav Dan Segal, he says, Paro gamu l'marosha raki kalsa ilav hara ve'etzba elukim hi, u'mitzrayim oleches v'nevedes, kishirosha kodesh baruch hu mevakesh mimenu, kanere b'li haskama solo yuchal. Paro thinks to himself, oh, God needs my permission. God needs my permission. Zelimud l'doros, Paro hu ayet tahara, hu noteet chusha ba'odam shubal b'chira, ולמרוס רצון השם הוא יכול לעשות כרצונו. ומלמד עושנו התורה שכל זה הוא בגדר. שכחתי, עללתי. שכן אין אדם נוקף אצבעו מלמטה, מה שיקח בעשר יוקח ממנו. Just like Hashem was playing a joke on Paro. What was the joke on Paro? Paro, we're going to go through a charade as if you are in charge. Ha! Joke's on you. I'm playing a joke on you. I'm giving you the impression, I'm giving the illusion, we're going the charade as if you are in charge. I think it's the kids on the playground. As if you are in charge. It's a charade, joke's on you. So says Rav Dan Segal, Kodesh Baruch Hu is showing us that the Paro in us is the Yetzirah. And the Yetzirah in us says, you think you have such Bechira Chavshis? You think you have such free will? You think you're able to make choices? You have autonomy for yourself? I'm in charge. And just like we played a joke on Paro to give the illusion, the charade, he was in charge, he goes also through, he has an illusion, he plays the joke on us as if we are in charge, but equally, we are not in charge, we are no more in charge than Paro was in charge. Okay, moving right along. Pasuk. Moving right along. Turn the page. Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Beis. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Od Negei Achad Avi Al Paro VaMitzrayim Achareichen Shalach Eschem Mizeh. I'm going to bring one more plague. It's going to send you out. Daber Na Ba'oznei Ha'am. Before I bring the next plague, Daber Na Ba'oznei Ha'am, speak in the ears of the people. Vishalu Ish Me'Israelu V'Isha Me'Israusa Kli Chesiv Kli Zahav. And people should request of his fellow, and a woman from her fellow, silver vessels and gold vessels. And the people will find favor in the eyes of the Egyptians. Moshe had gained esteem in the eyes of all. Daberna, please speak. Ish me Israelu, and you're going to borrow great wealth to leave. We've shared previously, I'm not going to review right now, the inside of the Vilna Gaon, the Chafetz Chaim. The classic understanding, the simple understanding, the correct Pashat Pshat understanding is, from whom are Jews meant to be borrowing this great wealth? From the Egyptians. From the Egyptians. However, the Gra proves that really it's not the Egyptians, it's Jews borrowing from fellow Jews. First of all, why are they doing this here and now, not later at the end of all the plagues? Why, the Gra says, does it use the word not, please? If you're taking from the Egyptians, why would you say please? You've been a slave for 210 years. You deserve to be compensated. You don't have to say please. It's not a favor they're doing for you. Moreover, if it were the Egyptians, why would it be Meis Re'ehu? Re'ehu in the Torah, Chazal always understand to mean somebody who's among you, Torah Mitzvos, somebody who has Kedushas Yisrael. You're not from the Egyptian. So therefore the Gra says, this was an instruction to the Jews. You want to be redeemed? You're in the heart of Egypt. You're in a culture of selfishness. If you want to be redeemed, you need to practice selflessness. To be redeemed, you need to demonstrate chesed. So how do you do chesed when you are a generation of slaves, 210 years of slavery? You have nothing. You're not going to organize big gemat. How do you do chesed? What's the chesed that you could do? You can't write big checks. What chesed are you going to do? Whatever little you have, everybody lend to the other. Whatever little you have, you lend to the other, and you create an environment and a culture and a movement of chesed, and as a result, you will be redeemed. Says the Chavetz Chaim, that's what we say in Az Yashir every day. Amzu ga'alta. Chisa b'chastacha, amzu ga'alta. The classic understanding, nachisa b'chastacha, is Hashem, your chesed. Zogta Chavetz Chaim, nachisa b'chastacha, amzu ga'alta. We were only redeemed in the merit of the chesed we showed one another. We could be on the lowest level of the 49 levels of Tumah, but as long as we remembered that life is not only about us, we were able to see others and do chesed for them, we were redeemable. We were redeemable. So right now Hashem says, let me see if you are redeemable. Are you willing to see outside yourselves? Are you willing to see outside yourselves or not? This is what the Chiddush HaRim says, the Makav Choshech, the plague of darkness, the penultimate plague. If we believe the plagues ascended in intensity, then why is darkness? We've all lived through blackouts. Why is that such a bad plague? Again, we've quoted this Chiddush HaRim before. The plague of darkness was the plague of selfishness, turning inward, unable and incapable and unwilling to see people around you, unwilling to bring them relief, unwilling to show them empathy, unwilling to stand up with them, unwilling to lend or give or care. That's living in darkness. Person who's self-centered, person who's driven by their ego, is living in the cloak of darkness. If you want to walk out and step out into the light, then see others and care about others. That's what it means, that the Mitzrim, it wasn't environmentally it became dark, it was they all became very dark in a mental state of darkness, but it didn't affect the Jews. Why? Because we continue to lend to one another. That is the Gra, the Chavetz Chaim, the Chiddush HaRim. But I want to share with you another insight. The Medrash says, The Medrash tell us, Hashem says to Moshe, do me a favor. I want you to go to the Jews and ask the Jews to ask the Egyptians to borrow their wealth. Why? Why was this such a favor? Why did Hashem ask that way? What did Hashem need or want from it? Shelo yomar oso tzadik v'avdu v'inuyusam kiyem acharechen yitzir b'chush gado lo kiyem bahem. Hashem says, I'm worried. I made a promise to a certain tzadik, and I don't want that tzadik to come back now and throw in my face that slavery I made good on, but leaving with great wealth, I didn't. Who was the great tzadik? Avram Avinu, where? The Brisbane Absarim. Hashem told Avram, you're going to have children, and this good is going to happen, but then they're going to go down to Egypt, and they're going to be in slavery, and they're going to be in servitude, and then they're going to leave with great wealth. So Hashem says, do me a favor, Moshe. Help me make good on my promise. Help me look good. Slavery, check, done. And believe me, Avram will remind me, I fulfilled that promise. Now I need to fulfill the other promise, which is that you leave with great wealth. Help me make good on that promise. Ask them to all leave with great wealth. Ask them to leave with great wealth. And the question is, was Avram really going to challenge Hashem? Avram, the Av Hamon Goyim, Avram, who was the beginner of the Jewish story, Avram was really going to challenge God? Gemara says in Brachos, Kol Dibur V'Dibur Sheyatam Yekadosh Baruch L'Tov, Afilu Atanai Lo Chazer Bo. Moreover, why Daber Na? So many explanations were given, but the Sefer L'Sitcha Elyon quotes from the founding Rosh Hashiva of Ner Yisrael in Baltimore, Rav Ruderman, who said the following. Gemara says in Kedushin, Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Schar mitzvah b'hay amaleka. We do not get reward in this world. When we do good deeds, when we live obedient to Hashem's will, our reward is waiting for us in the world to come. V'adach zibetor l'man yitav lach v'arachta yamim hakaval olam haba shakula tov. Aye, the Torah has several places where it describes you'll live a long life, you'll have longevity, you'll have good days. Shiluach hakein, kibbut aveim, we know the places. So what does it mean? If it's true, schar mitzvah b'hay amaleka, that we don't have reward in this world, and it's all reserved and waiting for the world to come, then what does it mean when the Torah tells us you'll have a long life, you'll have a good life? Fizat pashut, So the answer is, whenever it says long life and good life, it's talking about in the world to come. It's never talking about in this world, because Chayim Mitzvah Amaleka. And you know who knew that? Klal Yisrael. In Egypt, they knew that Rechush Gadol did not mean in this world. They were prepared to leave Egypt with their pockets empty. Rechush Gadol, that promise that was given to Avram all the way back at Ben Absarim, the Jewish people understood to mean not that their portfolios and their 401k and the real estate market would all be high and up. They understood it to mean in Olam Haba, in the world to come, they would have a great life, a long life. The outlook of a Jew is, I don't do it for reward in this world. I don't say, where's my reward? Why, Hashem, I did all the right things. I volunteered on this committee, and I gave tzedakah to that cause, and I did my daf today, and I learned, and I said my tehillim, where's my reward? How come I'm going through this? Because a Jew knows my reward is waiting in the world to come. I don't do it for the here and now. I'm not like an Eved, I'm an Aslakaba Pras. I don't serve so that I get payment or compensation. It's all in the world to come. Zek Havanas Chazal, said Rav Ruderman. Shelo yomar osa tzadik, v'avdum v'inu osam kayim, hayne begufa magashmin ba'olam hazeh, v'achrei chen yetzu b'chush gadol, lo kayim behem begufam elo olam haba. Avram would never have had a taina an Hashem, but Avram was going to ask a great brisker kasha. If the first half of the promise was a physical promise and a this world promise, then how could the second half of the promise be a next world promise? Lachain bikesh kodesh baruch mikla Yisrael yishlu klei kesev yikuyim b'hem achrechin yetzir b'chush gadol gam begufam ba'olam mazel amar shizulay sa'av tachas kodesh baruch hu. It wasn't Hashem's promise, but Hashem said, what if someone will challenge that the slavery was in this world, where's the reward? First half the promise was with the body, second half the promise is with the soul. So therefore he said, make me look good to have all the promises be consistent. Let the schar be in this world too. V'rechush gadol, let it be with great wealth. Let it be with great wealth. Our friend, Rav Zeidel Epstein, understands differently. He has a sefer, Ha'oros. I'm grateful to his grandson who gave me the 2-volume Ha'oros on Chumash. Rav Zeidel, I'm grateful to have discovered Rav Zeidel Epstein because he has fantastic insights into the Parsha and Torah. He says, "Hello, Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yiftiach Avraham Avinu b'Bris Ben Abisar Machar Ken Yitzur Berchush Gadol. Tzarich Lahavin. Hori Nitein Ba'Ayin Yafeh Unosein. Lamar Kodesh Baruch Rak Lishol. When a person gives, they should give generously. Hashem made a promise, I'm going to make you great wealthy. So why does he say, when you leave Egypt, how should we get the wealth? Borrow the gold and silver from your neighbor. Borrow. By the way, this is the borrow, like, can I borrow a tissue? There's certain borrow which there is no intent to return. Can I borrow a tissue? Can I borrow a dollar? There's some borrow that there is never going to be a return on that borrow. You're using the word borrow, but you mean, can I take, can you give? So here, the money was never going to go back. Parenthetically, the Gemara talks about years later in Alexandria in Egypt, there was a great court that convened and tried to sue the Jewish people with interest. Said, you left Egypt, you took our gold and silver, you claimed you were borrowing it, you never gave it back. Do you know how many years ago? Multiply times interest, inflation, you owe $4 billion. And what was the answer? By the way, this was also brought by an Egyptian university professor about 25 years ago. He tried a lawsuit like this again. He wasn't familiar, he only read the Chumash. He didn't know the Torah Shabbat Peh, that this was tried and failed. What was the answer then? It's the answer now. Okay, let's do the math. You claim we borrowed and didn't return inflation. No problem. Now let's talk about the work we did. How many hours, how many years, how much we should have been paid, and what the interest and what inflation is. You came out ahead. Lawsuit dropped. Lawsuit dismissed. So it was set up as borrow. On your way out of Egypt, Vayishalu ish meisra eyu, ask to borrow, ask to borrow. Okay, we know Hashem didn't mean borrow, we meant Hashem meant take and keep. And that's a fulfillment of the promise, Birchush Gadol, which then begs the question, so why did he say borrow? If Hashem knew, and we knew, it didn't mean borrow, it meant keep, then why did Hashem say borrow on the way out? So Zeid Lepstein in his Ha'ara says the following, Ma kavana rechush gadol? What does it mean, great wealth? Yesh meforshim shakavana lerechush ruchni, hakabir shamatan Torah. That the great wealth here did not mean physical wealth. The great wealth here was spiritual wealth. What is spiritual wealth? having a happy life, a serene life, a life filled with faith, a life filled with optimism. One can be wealthy spiritually. There's a great expression, one of my favorite quotes, they say about somebody, Nebuch, he's so poor that all he has is money. Nebuch, he's so poor, all he has is money. There are all kinds of other wealth other than money. There are people who are financially poor but extraordinarily wealthy. And there are people who are financially extremely well off and in every other measure are living in poverty. There's a spiritual and emotional and a mental wealth. And that's what Rechush Gadol meant. So how do you reconcile on the one hand this cute drash that Rechush Gadol means spiritual, emotional wealth, and on the other hand, that the Pashup Shat, the simple understanding of the verse, that it means the physical wealth. How do you reconcile the two interpretations? Listen to Reb Zeidel. He says, Harehim nizboni nira shekoma batenu shela olam betos yisodo. Be'inenu adam asheru adam sheish lahar bekesef. Sheyachol lachus v'chai ba'olam azeh b'shalva. We think the person with a lot of money can live with peace and tranquility in this world. B'chazal say, mi sheish lamana rotze masayim. It's actually the opposite. When you taste wealth, you know what you want? More. A person who has 100 wants 200. 200 wants 400. The person who's struggling to get by just wants to pay their bills and put food on the table, of course craves and wants more, but you know what? Finds a lot of satisfaction at the end of a week that the bills are paid and there's food in the fridge. But the person who's number 400 on the Forbes 400, I spoke about this last week in a different shiur. I was reading, I like to read the Forbes 400 every year. It's fun. And this year, I think to qualify to make it on the Forbes 400, you have to be worth north of $2 billion. That means that there's someone somewhere who has $1.9 billion and Nebuch, he's poor. It means Nebuch, he didn't make it. It means Nebuch, he said, hide my assets, I don't want anyone to know. But then he framed the Forbes 400, sent it out to his whole family previous years, and this year didn't make the list. Nebuch. Because I promise you, whoever was number 401 and didn't make the list wants to be number one. Yesh lo mana rotza masayim. The lifestyle is no different between number 401 and number one. I think number one's like $200 billion, the Tesla guy these days. I was wondering, is there any difference in your life if you have $200 billion, $20 billion, $1 billion, $100 million? Where's the cutoff where your actual life is different? Halavai, we should get an answer. So why? So why when you're number 401 are you bothered? Your life and your children's life and every descendant you will ever have's lives are all set for good, assuming you do the right things with it. You're set. So why do you need to go to number one if you're 401? Why do you need to move up into the 300s or 200s? Chazal told us, because there's an insatiable appetite. Go back before Chazal. Shlomo HaMelech told us, Oiv Kesef, Lo Yizba Kesef. A person who has a craving and an appetite for money, for more, if you live with a sense of more, a craving for more, then you never have enough. Yesh lo mana rotza masayim. You have 1 billion, you want 2 billion. You have 2 billion, you want 200 billion. I bet you the guy number one with 200 billion wants to be the first to a trillion. He wants to be the first one to break through the trillion mark. Because yesh lo mana rotza masayim. So therefore, says Reb Zeidel, listen to this pshat. Listen to this pshat. Miyu ha'asher amiti ha'sameach b'chelko. Echad shechai ba'kara shema sheyesh lo zetov. Kamu k'tas dachok. Who's the wealthy one? Not the one on the Forbes 400. Who has 1 billion but wants 2. Who's the wealthy one? The one who says, I have what I need. I'm satisfied with my lot. So dafka b'tzias mitzrayim ha'chan l'kabbalas ha'torah. When we left Egypt, Hashem was getting us ready, putting us in the right frame of mind, getting us set with the right perspective so we could receive the Torah. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, shekiyum havtacha sherechush gadol tiye derech shal she'ila v'lo nesina. He said, I'm going to set it up as you're borrowing, but you don't own. Because when you own, you think I'm wealthy, but now I want more wealth. But if you've borrowed and you don't ever believe it's yours permanently, then you'll be spared from the craving for more. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically set it up b'derech she'ela as borrowing to preserve the right ruchni perspective. Because Rechush Gadol meant you're going to leave Egypt wealthy. Physically wealthy or spiritually wealthy? Both. How can you be spiritually and materially wealthy? when you realize that which you own is only borrowed, it's never owned. When you go through life realizing, whatever I have, it's on loan from God, it's not part of a permanent collection. It's not permanent, there's nothing permanent. There's nothing entirely or absolutely secure. And therefore our attitude and mentality through life should be, it's on loan, I've borrowed it from God. And that's why, says Reb Zeidel, that's why specifically it was structured in this way. Reb Nachman of Breslov, I told you this new sefer I got, Shulchan HaShabbos with Reb Nachman, collect the teachings of Reb Nachman elsewhere, but organized on Shabbos. Moshe says, go borrow, so that you leave with great wealth. Hayim be'emes yatzanu mimitzrayim. Have we really left Egypt? Have we left? We think so. But l'maisa, shibud mitzrayim hulurak iruah histori, shahayel lefnei alfei shanim. Being in Egypt, being slaves to Egypt, is not just something historically that happened thousands of years ago. Chelek me'itano adayin nimtzayim b'mitzrayim gam b'yameinu. There's a piece of us that's still in Egypt. What does it mean to still be in Egypt? We're still stuck and captured by the klipos of Mitzrayim, by the mentality, by the moral decadence, by the moral corruption, by the... We're still living in it. Rav Nosson writes in Likutei Halachos, Avodas Elilim, Paro u Mitzrayim misamlim es koach hadimyon. Paro and Egypt are living in the world of imagination, of imagery, of desire, of longing. Ulefamim hem matzlichim l'shtalet al Yisrael, hu asechel, v'lulkodos o b'dimyon oshav. And sometimes it captures us. We have aspirations or dreams, we have images, we have desires or longings, which are foreign, which don't belong, which are Egyptian, they're morally corrupt and bankrupt. Morally corrupt and bankrupt. They have us working ovdim kol yemeim befarach, rodfim achrei hakesef b'li hafsaka, umamash ovdim b'chomer uvilveinim, k'dei livnos la'atzmam, b'nyanam g'deilim. Are we not still building pitam Ramses? Are we not still chasing the mighty dollar so we can knock down a house and build a bigger one than our neighbor? Are we not still pursuing? Are we not still consumed by the pursuit of more and more and more and more? Are we, even the Torah community, not still struggling with consumerism and materialism? A very firm magazine that we get every week, and I love the articles, and they're inspiring, and it's beautiful. And the back page of last week's issue was an ad for a Cartier watch. That was the whole back page of it. It was an ad for a Cartier watch and jewelry. Nothing wrong with a Cartier watch. If you're wearing one, tavo aleichem bracha. There's nothing wrong with it. I can appreciate a nice watch I received and I love and I'm grateful for a nice watch. That's the back page of a Torah Hashkafa magazine. That's what we want when it's flipped over on the counter. The children should see. What do I live for? Cartier. What do I live for? That's what we live for. I'm not going to break into my editorial now about the Chassan watches and the Rolexes and kids who haven't earned a penny in their life. They're not even allowed to have a plan how they'll one day earn a penny in their life. That's already a strike against them to have a plan. But they're walking around in what others worked their entire life to be able to earn as a luxury. Okay, I'll leave that out though. I'm not going to talk about it. But Rav Nosson writes, he points out, have we really left Egypt? Have we left Egypt? If what we hang on our wall is the Cartier ad, have we left Egypt? Again, there's nothing wrong with enjoying fine things. I enjoy fine things. Does it define us? Is it who we are and our aspiration? Is it what we talk about and what we teach? Is it what we model? Is it what we're consumed by? Does it influence our priorities? Then we haven't left Egypt. We're still building Pitom and Ramses. We're still building Pitom and Ramses. We're still trying to build, accumulate, amass more and more so we can have more and more and bigger and better than those around us. We're still in Mitzrayim. How do you get out? Ech yotze mizeh. How do you get out of Mitzrayim? So you know what Rav Nachman says? When you lend someone else what you have. How do you prove that what you have doesn't define you? When you can part with it. When you can part with it. There's nothing wrong with enjoying and having the finest things, but do you give generously? Do you lend generously? Do you share generously? If you have a closed fist, if you're stingy, if you're not running to give, let alone giving when you're asked, then you're not entitled to have, because it is defining you, and you're still in Mitzrayim. You're a slave to Pitom and Ramses. You're a slave. So, Daber Ba'aznei Ha'am. Hashem says, I'm about to set you free, but I want you to know what real freedom is. You know what real freedom is? Real freedom is when you share and you give what you have with others. That's why we start the Pesach Seder that way. We start the Pesach Seder, Halach Ma'anya. The very first thing we do with the Seder is we say, I want to prove I'm free. You know how I'm going to prove I'm free? Anyone who needs, come and enjoy. Aye, the door's closed, the window's closed, nobody hears you. It's the most disingenuous invitation of all time. You mumble into your Kiddush cup, anyone who's hungry, come in. Okay, let's start. It's the most disingenuous invitation. Doesn't matter, it's a declaration. It's a declaration. You know what freedom is? All this, my silver and my $4 billion matzahs and my fancy schmancy fine schmecker wine and my everything. All this, whoever wants, come. Come. It's not just for me. Come, enjoy, take, participate. It gives me more joy when you enjoy it together with me. That's freedom. That's freedom. That's simcha. That's Purim. Spend more on Matanas Lavyanim than you do on Mishloach Manas or Suda. When you share what you have, you show your real freedom. And that's why Daberna Bosnei Ha'am. Now is the time, he says, speak, please. Nah, please. Please tell the people that freedom is not because they have more than anyone else. That's not freedom. Your freedom is defined by how much you give, not how much you have. By how much you share, not how much you hold on to. Are you free or are you enslaved? Is measured not by what's in your bank account, but what you've given from it elsewhere. That's freedom. Daber na ba'aznei ha'am. Give and share, says Rav Nachman, through his Talmud Rav Nassim. That's why. Have we really left Mitzrayim? Okay, next. Kachatzos laila. Perikid Aleph Pasuk Dalet. Vayomer Moshe Kom Hashem kachatzos laila niyotzei b'soch Mitzrayim. Moshe says, at about midnight, I'm going out of Egypt. We're going to go out of Egypt at about midnight. Why kachatzos laila? About midnight. Kachatzos. Roughly, approximately, about midnight. Rashi has a comment. Kachatzos. Ke'achele kalal chatzos ba'alos. Dover shel chetzi. Rabbi Zeinu Dorshu kevechatzi alayla. Samach la'acharav la'bachatzos. Shema yitu atzniga atz ganine paro v'yomru Moshe badayu. What's going to happen? There's always a smart aleck. Always a smart aleck. And Paro has among his cabinet the greatest of the smart alecks. So here there are 9 plagues in, and the 10th plague is going to come. And had Moshe said, Bachatzos, not Kachatzos, had Moshe said, Bachatzos, Paro, midnight, here it comes. By the way, 9 plagues in and Paro still doesn't believe it. Why not? So the Pasuk says, because Hashem hardened his heart, but a good friend of mine told me what he thought was a great vort. 9 plagues in, and Paro still wasn't ready to listen. You know why? He didn't think it was 9 plagues. He thought it was still 1 plague with 9 variants. That's my friend Ari told me, Geshmak Vort. They found 10 cases of a new variant past Omicron. I'm not joking. We're up to the next variant after Omicron. 10 cases of the next variant. I forgot the name already. Yimach Shemo. Who wants to remember the name? So Paro didn't listen. It was 1 plague. Just 10 variants. Just 10 variants. So why does it say kachatzos? Had Moshe said bachatzos, be ready, because at midnight, sayonara, goodbye all firstborns, including you, Paro. Had he said at midnight, what would have happened? One of Paro's advisors, of Paro himself, would have looked at the clock and said, it wasn't midnight. It was 11:59 and 58 seconds. It wasn't midnight. It was 12 o'clock and 4 seconds. So clearly it wasn't Hashem. So out of that fear, anticipating that cynical reaction, Moshe doesn't say bachatzos at midnight. What does he say? Approximately midnight to bavorn, to avoid that conclusion of, it wasn't exactly, it was 4 milliseconds off. My watch had a different, my Rolex I got from my wedding has a different than your. No, so avoid that. It doesn't say Bachatzos, he says kachatzos. Rashi brings the Gemara Brachos. To avoid the cynical, it's tagnine paro. Good. Vadvarm tmum b'yos. I'm reading from the Meged Yosef by Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Leib Sorotskin, Rosh Yivan Telstone, whose son is my neighbor on Aliyah, new to our community. My dear friend Eli Sorotskin, his father visited, gave me his set of svarim. Wonderful. Meged Yosef al HaTorah. And he says the following. He says, Advarm Tmuam, Hari Betisha Makos, V'teisha ha-makos ha-kodmim Moshe ochiach she-dibar Hashem b'fiv. V'kasher yomar ken yeh bein avaz ha-maka bein besiluka. Afkan be'etzem ro'im. She-makas b'choros megiya kvish amar Moshe. El shafiach cheshbon agnini para'im b'diuk chatzos. He says, I don't understand. 9 times in a row, Moshe came and warned, we're going to suspend and supersede the rules of nature. Something extraordinary is going to happen. 9 out of 9 times, something extraordinary happened. Are you telling me on the 10th time, when he predicts something extraordinary is going to happen, and then it's off by a few milliseconds, you're going to say, ah, it wasn't him. It wasn't God. Nothing to see here. Nothing to believe here. Nothing to look at here. How can it be? You're going to say 9 out of 9 times Moshe was on the money. He predicted something extraordinary, supernatural, and it happened. But the 10th time he was off by a millisecond. Moshe's a clown. Moshe's a clown. He's a fool. So Ebenezer writes, Yosef Mistabad Litlo says, Mi Adiok Bitto Shalahem. They didn't have solar clocks, sonic clocks. They didn't have perfect timepieces. So everyone knew that it was an imperfect science trying to measure time. So more likely, Paro's advisors would say, yeah, it was off by a few milliseconds. Our watch is probably wrong. Because if now 10 out of 10 times what he warned happened, I'm going to go with our watch is off. So what is Rashi talking about? What is the Gemara talking about? That this is going to be Paro's reaction. Omnam nira. The meitzirim atakifim ashotim ba'adam hu hayeter lios tzodek. I love this insight he has here. He says Rav Sirotzkin, which is the harshest of all of the plagues? The harshest of all the plagues is the 11th plague. You say 11th plague? It's news to me. I thought there were only 10 plagues. I only take out 10 drops of water, of wine. What's the 11th plague? Says Rav Sirotzkin. Among the strongest Yetzaharas, the hardest Yetzaharas that we have to fight, is the Yetzahara to be tzodik. The Yetzahara to be right. We want to be right. We struggle with admitting we were wrong. Even when we're proving wrong. Nah, I didn't really say that. I said that. If this, then that. But my thing didn't happen, so I'm not really wrong. We struggle. Everyone wants to be right all the time. You see that the last 2 years, scientists and medicine and life and agencies, and nobody ever wants to say, I was wrong. I miscalculated. I came to the best conclusion with the information I had at the time, but I was wrong. Nobody ever wants to be wrong. We have an enormous and overwhelming Yetzirah to be right. To be right. Why is Yehuda the Gadlus of Shvatim? Yehuda is the father of monarchy. Why? Tzadka Mimeni. Because he overcame that Yetzahara, and he looked at Tamar and he said, I was wrong. You were right. I'm willing to say I'm wrong, and you are right. And he became Zacha Mishum Kach Lahamid Malachim B'Yisrael. Imkein lo ben akel melach Rasha keparo yodeh. Shu omei barush malchus Rasha. Shayachas liyudim meshach ma'ush shanahu begeder pesha la'anushus. At the end of 210 years, not all of which he was alive for, but at the end of an entire reign in which he is oppressed and persecuted and tortured, for him to look back and say, I have performed the greatest crime against humanity. You know how hard it is for a dictator, a despot, a corrupt. Instead, in his deathbed, he wrote a note, a suicide note, Paro, I was right and the rest of you drove me to this. A narcissistic, evil, psychotic person to be willing to say, I was wrong. And I owe you the apology. And I owe victims. Paro couldn't do it. So he says, this is the hardest plague. The 11th plague was he had to admit the truth. Moshe Amar Leparo, Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Zayin. Moshe says, Leman Teid'un. That's the goal of Makas Bechoros. You've been unwilling to admit you're wrong. You're unwilling to admit you're wrong. You insist you're right. So the 10th plague is going to be so powerful, so strong, you will have no choice but to admit it. And the Yerushalmi in Pesachim says, Amar Blevi, Keshem Shniten Koch Bekola Shal Moshe, Kach Niten Koch Bekola Shal Paro, Umahaya Omar, Kumutsu Mitoch Ami, L'Shavar Isam Avdei Paro, Mikan Ve'elach Atem Avdei Hashem. Paro ultimately says, you're no longer my slaves. I'm done. I admit I was wrong. Go. You're free to go. Kriyas Yamsov, it says, V'yedu Mitzrayim Kani Hashem, Paro Michamocha Nedar Bakodesh. So he was forced Lahodos Al Ha'emes. That was the 11th plague. The harshest and the most severe, the most punitive and the worst plague was, he was positioned and forced to have to admit he was wrong. And for Paro, that's the hardest plague of it all. He'd lose his own firstborn son before he'd admit he was wrong. It was less severe a plague to lose his own son than to admit he's wrong. The harshest plague is the 11th plague, and that's a plague in our lives. Kachatzos alayla. So says Rav Sirotzkin, it's true not only Paro, true of Paro, it's true for ourselves, that the Yetzirah has that ability and that power. It fools ourselves. It fools us into being able to manipulate our thinking and distort our thinking and cloud our judgment and thinking. I was off by a few milliseconds. It probably wasn't Hashem. He doesn't really care. It doesn't really matter. That's the power of the ego, power of arrogance, the power of the inertia against the willingness to admit that we are wrong. So much so that Moshe has to bevorn it. Kachatzos, not ba, kachatzos alayla. He has to go so far. Okay, we got through about half of what I wanted to say. Half, literally half. Literally half. Should we do one more? Okay, one more, last one, because it's a Reb Zeidel, and I'm on a Reb Zeidel kick. Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chav Zayin. Last one. We're already over time. Indulge me one more moment. Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chav Zayin. Page 356. We have the whole, your children are going to ask, here's what you're going to answer. And Vayikoda Amba Yishtachu. Moshe heard this, and he bowed down. The people heard, and they bowed down. Now the famous question on the people heard, and they bowed down is, Vayikoda Amba Yishtachu is, what are they bowing down again? Is this good news or bad news? What was the question that's being asked here? Go back a pasuk. When your children will ask you, what is this all about that you're doing? Lachem velolo. I'm not doing, I'm not involved, I don't buy it. But what is all of this nonsense that you're doing? And the people, Vayikoda, it's the best thing in the world. They bow down, thank you, Hashem. I have such a child. Everybody asks, whose question is that? Of the four sons, that's the question of the Russia. Vayikoda, Vayishtachu, thank you, Hashem. That I have a child who's a Rasha? It's a question everybody asks. There's a great answer, but it's not what I want to share with you. I want to share with you a different answer. Rashi says, Vayikoda Amba Yishtachu, they bow down, why? Al Besuras HaGu'ula, Al Besuras HaAretz, Al Besuras HaBanim. They bow down for the three pieces of good news. When God said, you will have a child who will ask this question, and this is the answer you should give. He said, in the answer we're supposed to give Hashem, you just revealed to us three pieces of great news. There'll be a redemption, we're going to inherit a land, and we're going to have children. You've given us three pieces of great news. Three pieces of great news. So says Rav Zeidel, why are you thinking about the children right now? I understand that you'll be redeemed because right now you're in slavery. So that will be a major change, you'll be redeemed. I understand you'll have land, right now you live in Egypt. You're going to go into Israel. But Al Besoras, on the news that you're going to have children, you have children right now. That's not new news. Where's the news there? They multiplied in Egypt like never before. So where's the news there? Why is that good news there? So the answer is, you know what you see from here? You're right, that's not new news. But when you experience new good news, and you're now obligated to thank, you don't only thank for the new news, you thank for everything good going on in your life. And that's what Reb Zeidel told the following story. When he was learning in the Mir in Poland, once a bachur had an intestinal disease that was life-threatening. So they took him to Warsaw. From Mir, they took him to Warsaw for surgery. So the yeshiva students davened, they did zchuyos, they did mitzvahs, they gave tzedakah. Their friend, their chaver, needed this emergency surgery, could have died, they davened with all their heart. A few days later, somebody came back from Warsaw with four pieces of great news. Baruch Hashem, and Ituach Hitzliach. Baruch Hashem, the surgery was successful. A week later, the Mashkiach of the Mir, Rabbi Yerucham, got up, and he said the following. He said, "B'chol pam kishanu mavarchem birchas asher yatzar, tzrichim lahodos im oso simcha v'regesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shehanitu achitzliach." Every time you say an asher yatzar, you should say it with the same fervor, the same passion, the same excitement, as with those four words, "the surgery was successful." Every time one relieves themselves, it is as miraculous as its success should be celebrated and appreciated as much as when the surgery happened. When something happens that we're grateful for, it should inspire us to see the things that we've taken for granted that we should be grateful for too. The capacity to relieve oneself in a healthy way is no less miraculous or deserving of our gratitude and celebration than a surgery. Each time, I'm not saying you have to make a kiddush every time you go to the bathroom, but the fervor of the asher yatzar should be filled with just as much joy. So that's pshat al besoras habonim. You're right, you have children right now. But while we're rattling off all the pieces of good news, you're going to be redeemed, you're going to be in the land, and isn't it amazing you have children? You're right, that's not new. But when something new does happen that we're grateful for, it should also cause us to reflect on that which we've taken for granted that we should be grateful for, and pile on the gratitude as well. Another great Reb Zeidel I'm grateful for. Have a fantastic day. Stay happy, stay healthy, stay holy. Tomorrow morning, Mesillas Yesharim, and then Living with Emunah. Tomorrow night, we go behind the Bima with Nissan Black, 9 o'clock tomorrow night.